girl who is turned into a swan. But her prince falls for the wrong girl, and she kills herself. He promised to feature me more this season.
Well, he should. You've been there long enough.
And you're the most dedicated dancer in the company.
Our new swan queen, the exquisite Nina Sayers.
And Lily, you're going to be amazing.
Watch the way she moves. Sensual. She's not faking it.
Seduce us! Attack it! Attack it! Come on!
Where'd you get these?
It's nothing.
You sweet girl.
Feel my touch. Respond to it.
If someone's hot for teacher, I don't want to talk about that.
You really need to relax.
It's the role, isn't it? It's all this pressure.
I knew it'd be too much. I knew it.
What's she doing here?
He made me your alternate.
The only person standing in your way is you.
How do you know where I live?
I have my ways.
She's after me.
Nobody's after you.
Please believe me.
What happened to my sweet girl?
He's gone!
Congratulations on your Oscar nomination. This is exciting. This is your first, right?
It's my first. It's pretty exciting. Yeah, it's, do
you feel nervous at all, or?
Not yet. Mostly just I've got a month or so to get nervous. But no, it's just been kind of insane and exciting and surprising, and you know, it's interesting to see all the reactions and you know all the people kind of coming out to hook up with you again and speak to you again that you haven't talked to forever. So
right.
That's probably the nice side effect of all of it.
Well, that's good. No, that's good.
And Black Swan got a lot of love, and it gets a lot of love from us too. It's definitely one of our favorites of the year.
My favorite of the year, I think, wasn't it? I think Lion was number one. That was probably my favorite film of the year.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. That's good to hear. That's
no, it's just hear. It really, I have to say this, it's intoxicating is the best word I can, right now, at least when I'm thinking about it, intoxicating is how I think of the movie. Just you just get so wrapped up into it from the very first moment to the very end, and you're just like, you can't take your eyes off it, and it's just, there's all, I mean, I want to say all exhilarating as well. It's just so much fun to watch.
Well, that's cool. I mean, you know, the thing that we obviously went for, with the movie was to try and kind of immerse your head in this person's experience as much as possible and really go for it and go out there in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So the real reward has been to see how enthusiastic everybody's reaction has been to it, you know, and you know, from the positive to the negative, every reaction has been extreme to the movie, and that's what we went for. You know, it doesn't inspire indifference. It's a movie that engages you, works a little bit as a Rorschach, and, you know, people definitely engage with the movie and experience it. So that's all we could ever wish for.
I definitely want to ask you about the process of putting Black Swan together, but give me a sense of when you wanted to get into the film business, why editing?
Well, I was a true film geek as a kid growing up. And I always wanted to see movies more than doing anything else. So I knew somewhere along the way I wanted to try and do it, and I managed to finagle my way into different positions on movies, but really just interning on a set. And I worked on one very big movie kind of early on. I just kind of lucked into this position. I'm not going to say what it is, but I got to be a PA on the set and really see what it was all about. And I found myself at 4 o'clock in the morning in South Philly in a parking lot watching after horses, and I realized that I couldn't have been more removed from making a movie if I tried.
Mm-hmm.
And with a little research, kind of realized that editing is kind of the most focused creative activity that you could get into with the least amount of distraction and logistics. And that's really where it all kind of comes together, and it either works or it doesn't. So I changed my sights and went straight for that and started working there, and then found I had an affinity for it, you know, and really dug in with it and pursued it.
Did you have, when you were breaking in, did you have a mentor?
Well, one of the first editors I hooked up with was a gentleman named Bill Panko, who I worked with several times. And, you know, he's a true craftsman and really mentored me in a lot of ways along with other assistants. You know, he came from a school of editors who in New York who all worked for D.D. Allen. You know, and often you'll run into those people because they're the cream of the crop, and they're a different generation because they all worked in film when everything was kind of standardized in a specific way. So I was in a last wing of that where I got to work with him on film cutting rooms for about 4 or 5 years. You know, an editing room was a much more engaged environment than it is now in some ways in terms of the crew. Because when you worked with film, you really were dependent on your assistants to feed you material and organize for you and so on and so forth. So there were always other people in the room. You were never alone. So there was always a constant dialogue going on where Bill would try things and say things, and you could have a dialogue with him about it and see what he was doing and learn from it. And he would always give things to cut or play with or try, and it was just a constant growing experience. So that was invaluable to me. And I would have to cite him as my mentor.
Well, Bill Panko, he edited De Palma films,
yes,
among many others.
Yeah.
And we are insanely crazy about Brian De Palma on
the
show we've done.
Of De Palma, really. I mean,
yeah,
we've
done five or six tributes to him.
Oh, cool.
So,
very cool.
And he is one of the great visualists in,
yes,
film. Tell me about working with his material in the editing room.
Well, yeah, I was an assistant on Snake Eyes and on Femme Fatale. So I got to learn about his approach. You know, he's a craftsman as well, obviously. And I think that one of the things I learned about working on films that Brian directed, De Palma directed, is that they were, there was somebody at the head who knew how to be decisive, if that makes any sense.
Right.
That they knew exactly what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to assess information and put it in front of you, and if you put it in front of them, they knew exactly which choice it was. There was never any hemming and hawing. There was never any over discussion. They knew how to plow forward, and if there were obstacles, they knew how to push past them. So that was something I witnessed with him all the time, and I think it's why his movies are as focused and clear as they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're also shot in a way that it's clear he has a vision of how they need to be put together editorially. It's not just coverage of close-ups and a master shot and just see what you get. It's always very constructed.
Well, and when we think De Palma, we think of the great sequences.
Right.
And I can't imagine... Yeah, exactly. And I can't imagine that those aren't storyboarded.
Well, sure, I think they are. They were... they are pretty storyboarded, and he pretty much knows what he's going to do with them. You know, he's open to things, I guess, I would imagine. But, you know, I think that the thing that's interesting about his filmmaking that is similar in a way to Darren is that his films always have a very solid point of view and subjectivity. Mm-hmm. And often De Palma's films are about experiments in point of view and subjectivity. And I think that Darren is interested in exploring that as well. He's always looking at a scene in terms of how we're relating to the character's point of view and how we're best connecting with it. So that's something they have in common.
Well, part of what I love about Black Swan, it's the same sense that draws me to De Palma films. There's this delirious quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that strong subjective point of view that you're talking about. But I bring up the storyboarding with De Palma because I was surprised to learn, if I'm incorrect, please tell me, but Mr. Aronofsky does not storyboard generally.
He did not on The Wrestler and at all, not in a single sequence. And on Black Swan, we only storyboarded a few shots or instances, mostly having to do with the logistics of budgeting our visual effects and knowing what we were going to cover and what we needed to know what it would cost and what elements we would need. But he kind of imposed that on himself not to storyboard. I mean, one might argue that his other films sometimes were so aggressively structured in terms of how they were framed and how they were shot and how they were conceived that it didn't open him up to certain opportunities in shooting the film. Like the fountain certainly was mapped out to every degree. We had a whole animatic on that movie of every scene, whether it involved visual effects or not. So I think by not storyboarding, it was a way of shedding that instinct to over-control the environment and be open to performance.
How do you know when you have everything you need?
Well, I think you know what the important beats are in the scene, emotionally and in terms of character and in terms of the narrative. So you just have to know that you've got those, and usually if you have some logical coverage plan, you'll get to them. I mean, Darren has a very strong visual instinct and knows pretty much what he likes on the day. But I will say on this film, one of the precautions that we took was that I was on set more than half of the shoot, mostly had to do with our short schedule, and then we had all this dance stuff to film and some of the horror beats and whatever, that he'd like to have a sounding board with me just to kind of discuss from time to time what other pieces we might need. And I was cutting the videotape along the way, not in any fine cut sense, but just to see if the angles that we had worked or told the story, or if we needed another pickup of something to help push things in a different direction if we needed an option. Mm. So that was our precaution.
Well, both The Wrestler and Black Swan, they kind of deal with performers and the kind of discipline they need to practice, and the self-destructive kind of nature of their means of expression.
Right. Destroying yourself for your art, maybe. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, we're talking about two seemingly on the surface completely different art forms here, if you want to call it wrestling and ballet. As an editor, did you find that you needed to immerse yourself equally in both of those activities for these films?
Thank God I did not. I mean, I did during, when we were in pre-production during The Wrestler, I went to go see a lot of matches with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Darren likes to have, more than just immersing people in that world, is to have his kind of crew, the heads of departments, in sync with each other as much as possible and kind of working as a team. So even though it probably didn't really have any influence on what I was going to do, I went along with him. But what was interesting is, I mean, I guess the presumption is I just went like by default. But a lot of things that came up during those times were things that influenced the final product. I mean, I brought some audio recording equipment with me, and I got all these crowds, and I noticed some interesting things about the rhythm of the crowds, and that the audience is just as much a participant in a wrestling match as the wrestlers, and that became kind of a character for us. And then there were other things that I picked up along the way that we talked about. And then with the ballet stuff, I wasn't as much involved in the research of the ballet world. I think it was less important, but obviously Darren was very immersed in it. But I did go and see some ballet, and we went and saw Frederick Wiseman's documentary and some other things, just to kind of familiarize ourselves a little bit. But really, that's the setting. You know, there are other things that are happening thematically in terms of character that are really the focus of the film.
Well, and with Black Swan, I mean, you have to follow the actual story of the ballet. You have to establish what might be some of her hallucinations, what's reality, her kind of spiral. Was it a great challenge to keep all those balls in the air and keep it making sense and cohesive?
There were a lot of challenges in terms of that, but, you know, I think that I decided early on to keep it simple in that sense. Like, I chose not to get over familiar with Swan Lake or various productions of it or anything, because that wasn't the story I was telling. I was really just simplifying and telling Nina's story and that arc. And that I knew that already in the material, as Mark Heyman had written it and Darry worked on it, that it merged into the ballet on its own. But there were other things that we knew tricks that we wanted to do to try and pull the elements together, and one of the big pieces was the music, that it was going to start out. That it was an early decision from Darren that every piece of music in the film is rooted in the Swan Lake score, and even if it's disguised. And it starts out deconstructed to a degree that it's barely recognizable. And by the time you build towards her complete breakdown, it's full-on Tchaikovsky. And that's just an element that becomes more and more operatic along with the film. So that was just one piece of that puzzle. But the last third of the film really is the area where Nina's narrative and the ballet all kind of merged together, and there were cues with sound and cues with music and little hints of visual effects that we dropped along the way that all kind of helped us make it converge at the end.
Well, it is so operatic. And as you're going through the process of editing various cuts of this, were there moments where you thought we're peaking too high here, and that's going to sacrifice the crescendo of the following sequence? Were there different varying degrees of operatic that you were going for?
Yeah, you're always calibrating the dynamics of things a little bit. I mean, we didn't aggressively restructure anything because of that issue, but there were certain things that were maybe a little too bold, believe it or not, when you see the finished film. There were things that were more bold that we pulled back a little bit in some areas here and there so that it felt like a constant arc. Obviously the key element of that is Natalie's performance, you know, which is tremendous on so many levels, all the things that she brings to it and all the things that she explored with Darren, that it goes to extremes. And quite often, in shooting certain scenes that were emotional, they would push and pull it in all sorts of directions, and sometimes it would be way too big for that given moment in the film. And it was just a question of checking and balancing and going back and calibrating and seeing, you know, how upset should she be at this point in the film, or how lost is she? You know, we had to kind of meet it out so that by the time she really broke down, you had built towards it. And then there are other factors, like the other supporting characters who will have to constantly walk their little line with her in terms of, are they good or are they bad, I guess is the simplistic way of putting it, with the mother, you know. There's the obvious sinister elements to it, which is that she's, imprisoning her daughter effectively. Mm-hmm. But the other way you could look at it is that... from her point of view, her daughter is obviously sick, and all she's doing is trying to protect her. You could kind of go back and forth on all the characters, on Lily and on Leroy too, what their motivations are. So that was an element to kind of help play with calibrating the tension a little bit in terms of the whole piece.
So in terms of Aronofsky shooting, he kind of gets a wide range of emotions from subtle to extreme, so you can have that choice in the editing room.
Usually he does, yeah. It's pretty obvious to me what it is that he's going for. Sometimes from his direction, sometimes from what I know what's important in the script from discussing with him in advance. But I know when he's going for something specifically. But oftentimes, if it's not quite clicking yet, he won't beat it with a dead horse. He'll back off to it in a totally different direction, so that you can come at it, the actors have an opportunity to come at it from a totally fresh angle without over-calculating it. So you end up with a lot of variation in performance when you have that.
Well, in terms of coming at it from a completely fresh angle, this is what fascinates me a lot about editing. And I ask this a lot of the editors and various filmmakers we have. When you're so immersed in the process and the minutiae of each scene, Yep. How do you keep perspective so you can keep a fresh perspective and angle on it?
Well, we have a pretty specific process. I mean, each film is different, but with Darren, the way it usually works with him is that I'll try and give you as concise a rundown of this as I can. But basically what we do is I'll do an assembly during the production period, which we have very little discussion about in advance. He really just wants to see my impressions or reactions from the footage of how I anticipate it should go together, based on my understanding of the movie or my understanding of what I think he wants. And doing that, I'll usually have some kind of vague notes of he liked bits in this take the best, or so on. So I'll build the performances and I'll build an assembly based on, you know, just my gut, more or less. Mm-hmm. But there's a pretty deliberate process in doing that where I do what I call stacking, and I know other editors do this too, where you basically take each line of each scene and stack it together in a row, every take or angle of it that you have. And you pick your starting point, basically, whichever scene or angle you want to start with, and you work with that actor, and then you pick whatever your favorite performance of that line is, and then whatever comes next has to, by logic, be a reaction to that. So then you look at the stack of the next line and see which one flows the most intelligently, and then the next, and then the next. Without really considering which take is the favored take, necessarily. Mm-hmm. You just try and construct a dialogue between the actors that feels natural, that has a train of thought. And then you tweak from there. Once we have an assembly, Darren looks at it, because it's his only opportunity to get another objective kind of view on the whole thing. And then we go through a fairly long process of scene by scene, pretty much watching all the dailies again from scratch. And the reason we do that is because, you know, the pressure of the shoot is over. And there's no other circumstances there. There's no other, you know, I wish I got this, or any frustrations about what was on the set. You just look at it, having seen the sequence or whatever put together already, and knowing what's working for you and what isn't. So with that new context, you just look at all the dailies again and just make notes of things that are different or interesting to try. And then we work through that process and really kind of shape the performances and things in a line in the way that Darren really wants them. And then you take a step back on the next pass and experiment with structure any way you need to. If there are scenes that you think are just disrupting the flow, or scenes that need to serve a different narrative purpose or whatever, but you kind of then step back and look at the big picture once you think you're satisfied with the details. And then usually you're dealing with broad strokes. And then here and there, you have little tweaks that you want to do to reinterpret something. But the minutiae of the film is really kind of set by then. It's why the assembly is so important, because you want to lay out your options and, you know, really
right.
Through the performances before you get lost.
Has there been, though, an example of screening the film for an audience earlier in the process and rethinking the way a scene is cut based upon their reaction or how it plays to
Yeah, oh, no, yeah, definitely. You know, there are scenes that get rethought. You know, it's not usually whole things, but you do reconsider certain elements of the movie. I mean, you know, there are certain scares or things that we, in the film, or moments, you know, of terror that we kind of experimented with to maximize them or figure out what wasn't working about them and trying to get more on point. Or if we felt like the structure was meandering a little bit, we tried to figure out what was indirect about the flow there and try and reshape that area. And in that process, sometimes a scene can turn into something completely different than it was originally intended. If a scene has a positive connotation for a character, you might make it have a negative one instead,
right.
Just in terms of where you end it or where you start it. And there are scenes in the movie that definitely were reshaped based on that, because something just wasn't sitting right about them and we had to rethink them.
Well, I'm curious how you, if you ever kind of reference other films and relate it to the one you're currently working on, because I read that you and Darren had looked at certain horror films in preparation for Black Swan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. We don't really study other films necessarily, but Darren will have me look, both for The Wrestler and for this, look at certain films that either are in our category or touch on certain things that we have, either to see how other people have done things or how not to do things, and just kind of make decisions about our approach. But it's usually never like, oh, we love what they did in this movie, let's take that. That's rarely a quotation, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But it does sometimes spark ideas of, you know, oh, that filmmaker did this thing. What if we took it a step further and did this? You know, if something
right.
that just kind of taps into something that we've already talked about. So it's kind of a wide range of influences. And that's why it's hard to really pinpoint specifically which films influence our process. It's more of a fluid thing than that.
Well, did you guys consider, this is just a shot in the dark, but consider Repulsion when you were prepping?
Sure.
Black
well,
Song?
I mean, yeah. I mean, we were obviously familiar with it. Although I'll say that I didn't rewatch it in this process, probably because I knew it was too close to home in some way. But there were other films that were less directly related. Like we watched a lot of Asian horror films, because I was not terribly familiar with them. And Darren wasn't either, you know. So, I mean, certain ones we were, but I watched them kind of on my own. And then if there was anything that stuck out, I kind of brought them to his attention of things. What if we tried something that was, you know, related to this thing? And then usually, you know, by the time it was done, it was morphed into something else. Then it didn't really matter, but it sparked some other idea.
Yeah.
So that was one thing I looked at. And then, of course, we also looked at different dance films. Like there was a Carlos Sora film, Carmen,
mm-hmm.
which we looked at because it's an example of a film where the film's narrative and the narrative of what they're performing are very paralleled, and that there's no real distinction between the two by the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was a not obvious way of doing it. So that intrigued us.
Well, before I let you go, I have to ask you about another collaborator that you've worked on a couple of projects with, and that's Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
With Fantastic Mr. Fox, I don't know anything about how animation is done. I would think that it's a very meticulous process, but I would think there wouldn't be a lot of choices in the cutting room. Am I completely wrong about that?
Yes. the options never stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
wow.
when you're not dealing with footage per se,
mm-hmm.
You're constantly refining and reshaping the scene and the structure and the settings until the shots start to come in, and then you change everything about the scene around those shots, depending on how successful they were, when you realize that suddenly that shot isn't saying the thing that you want it to say. So then you're constantly running in place alongside a production where there are 30 shots going on at once in different scenes, and every time a shot comes in, it requires that you completely reevaluate that given scene. So we're constantly reshaping and rethinking things when you're working on an animated project, because there's really no beginning and middle and end to the process. There's no production period and then just editing. I mean,
right.
You know, we had a 2-week editing period. That's what we had on that movie. Because we were ferociously nibbling away at the whole thing the whole time we were shooting. And it just turned into the situation where we realized that anything was possible. You know, just because the shot was done, it didn't mean our work was complete. Because usually we would recut it by pulling out frames here and there a million different ways and splitting the action and making one character move faster or fixing something that it did with its arm that we didn't want it to do. Just the options were ridiculous. So by the time we were done, there was nothing left as originally intended.
Okay, so my question was completely wrong-headed.
No.
No, but I mean, I probably would have said the same thing. before I did this.
Right.
And Wes probably would have too.
Let me ask you this. So did you? So you worked with Mr. Anderson, perhaps the whole production, hand-in-hand with him?
Yeah, well, here's what happened, is that I worked with him on Darjeeling Limited, mm-hmm. and then we did the first voice recording before Wrestler started.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut together the voices, the first two recordings, kind of like a radio show with lots of little effects and things, just to kind of see what the timing was. And then I went away and worked on The Wrestler. And in the meantime, they drew up all these storyboards and refined them a little bit, and they had an animation editor working with Wes for a little bit. And then they went through the slow process of budgeting and building the sets and the puppets. And I came back probably during the first or second week of production. So I was along through the whole production period, which was really like a little over a year.
Wow. Mm. Wow, that is a long, long, long process.
Yes. Yeah, I think he thought he could just produce that movie and then go off and direct something else live action, but I think he learned differently.
Yeah. Before I let you go, if you were to teach a class in film editing,
yeah.
which have you ever done that?
I haven't. I've gone to classes and talked, but I haven't taught an editing class.
Well, I'm wondering what would be three titles that you give the students to examine for examples of great film editing.
Outside of
your own, of course.
It's so hard. You can't do that. You can't do that because, and you know, somebody just asked us a similar question, how do you judge editing? You can't. Mm-hmm. You know, if the movie works mm-hmm. and it flows and it continually surprises you, then it's edited well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no other criteria than that. I don't know what I would use as examples except to say pick your three favorite films and we talk about how they were edited. That's really the answer. And the other key to editing is to trust your gut.